This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Sorry for being a little late this evening, but I'm in another country, and I'm in a place where it's very difficult to get an Internet connection. But here we are talking about the major issues facing European mankind wherever we dwell upon the earth. It's good to be with you. A lot going on. You know, I've really been concentrating a lot on what's going on with Hurricane Katrina. Obviously, it's kind of interesting that this disaster has struck my area. This is an area, of course, I grew up in, and I have obviously many ties to. I was elected to office in the heart of this struck area. I have many friends. My boyhood home, my family home, which is mortgaged to the hilt and rented, is now under. Well, it's under about 10 feet of water, and it's an interesting process, and it's a terrifying process to see what's happened to my city. There's a lot of problems. New Orleans has always had a lot of problems, but New Orleans also has had many aspects that are fantastic and wonderful. The history and heritage, it's almost the most European of American cities. I've been traveling, and I just got in on the plane just recently, and I'll leave my address and my location a secret for the time being. I'll let you know what I'm up to in a couple days, and I'll have some exciting news, I think, for you. Certainly interesting news for what I'm doing and my work and the future of our efforts. But right now I'm going to kind of keep that quiet. And deal with some of the issues, especially the hurricane. I wrote a story, of course, this morning. Again, I'm trying to put out a lot of material. I'm traveling and working and teaching, and it's very difficult. But here's the story I put out this morning for you in a verbal format, an audio format, the spoken word format. I don't have my reading glasses. I hate to admit that I need them, but I will certainly share this with you. And the best of my ability in reading this straight from the text. It's a very small text. My computer is messed up, so I have a very small screen, but I will do my best. If I miss a word or two, please understand. This article is entitled A Tale of Two Cities and Bogus Claims of White Racism. Crime soars in New Orleans, declines in Covington. White areas actually receive far less federal help than the black areas of New Orleans. As most of you know, my old family residence in New Orleans has been flooded and is a total loss. My home and office in Mandeville, Covington has also been severely damaged. Obviously, I know most of these areas very well, as I do scores of people who live in them. Since the storm, through media searches and from my many personal contacts and friends, I've been following the post-hurricane developments closely and have provided a clearinghouse for information that the mass media has withheld. Obviously, being from New Orleans, this issue is extremely important to me and one that I think I'm following as closely as anyone anywhere in the world. America's controlled media has been an orgy of recrimination against white people, even ultimately blaming white people and white racism for the carnage from black murder, rape, and mayhem that happened in New Orleans. Black leaders and many white media have actually said that white racism in government is to blame for the Congo-like brutality perpetrated against innocent people. White self-haters have even made the excuses for those savages who butchered, raped, and robbed the innocent survivors of the storm. Now, these individuals that perpetrated these incredible atrocities, I would not even call these predators animals. That term is not adequate to describe them. I view them as far lower than any part of the animal kingdom. And again, I'm talking about the predators. I'm not speaking about all black people before I'm misquoted and misconstrued in some of the Jewish press. I'm talking about those who raped 7 and 8 year old little boys and girls. In one case, in fact, they cut one girl, apparently, literally vivisected her. They cut her right down the torso. In addition to these atrocities, these creatures caused even more deaths and suffering by attacking the police, rescue helicopters, and the many good Samaritans who tried to bring aid to those who were suffering so terribly. It wasn't right racism that caused this insane Congo-like brutality. Just the opposite is true. It was black racism, brutality, and savagery that prevented help from reaching the people. There was certainly a great failing of federal disaster relief, a failing which should warrant the firing of Homeland Security Czar Michael Chertoff, as hundreds were dying from his neglect. Chertoff announced to the nation how he and his subordinates were in charge and doing a wonderful job. Indeed. But make no mistake, the failure wasn't one that simply occurred in the black areas. It was a complete and overall failure for all areas, white and black. Now, the easily proven fact is that federal relief was focused far more on black areas than on white ones. As usual in racial matters, the media has gotten everything entirely reversed. New Orleans dominated the attention of the press and government show-offs like Chertoff. It was the focus of the federal relief effort, although other areas were hit just as hard, and some areas hit even harder per capita than New Orleans. In fact, the overwhelmingly white areas of St. Bernard and Plaquemines Parish were hit much harder than New Orleans. These areas suffered more extensive and severe flooding. There were huge areas in New Orleans that suffered no flooding at all, to where refugees could have fled. But in St. Bernard, there were almost no dry areas to which refugees could flee. Scores of white elderly and otherwise helpless whites have perished in their homes. Relief still, as of this writing, has not reached all the suffering and dying. Part of the reason for this homicidal delay was the mayhem in New Orleans that diverted resources and attention from some of the hardest hit areas. Mayor Broussard, president of the overwhelmingly white Jefferson Parish, from where I was elected to the House of Representatives, by the way, organized a heroic and successful effort to prevent flooding of the 17th Street Canal, which was coming through the weakened levee on the Jefferson side of the canal. I know the area intimately, as it was the boundary of my representative district where I served in the House of Representatives. It was saved. This area was saved by the heroic and well-organized efforts on that side of the canal, unlike the complete failure to protect the people by the black administration on the New Orleans side. Let the chips fall where they may. Broussard said federal help from FEMA and Homeland Security were zero, and in fact they hindered more than helped the emergency in Jefferson. In an impassioned, sobbing plea for help, and that was on the Russert program, Meet the Press, the same program that I was on a few times, he told about the parish emergency response administrator, who was in touch with his elderly mother trapped in a nursing home during the flood in St. Bernard. for 5 days, believing that the feds were telling the truth, he repeatedly told his mother that help was coming that day. On the fifth day, after never receiving the promised help, she died. I know Aaron Broussard well, and although we were political opponents in the Louisiana governor's race, he always was decent and respectful to me. To see the pain on his face and hear his sobbing and recounting of the tragedy was one of the most moving things I've ever witnessed on television. It brought tears to my eyes. Now I will quote from some on-location reporting by NOLA.com of the Times-Picayune, which, by the way, is a New Orleans area paper owned and run by the super Zionist pro-minority Newhouse family in New York. It's one of the most anti-white papers in the United States of America, and it opposed me viciously when I ran for governor. In fact, it ran 13 editorials in a row on the front page in opposition to my candidacy. So the anti-white racists can't call this paper a, quote, racist screed by any means. The article points out that Covington and Mandeville and St. Tammany Parish, a hard-hit, predominantly white area, got absolutely no federal aid save for some bottled water and ice. Now that's really white racism and federal aid at work, right, folks? We got proof of it now. The feds actually brought some water and ice to parts of St. Tammany Parish. But what happened in these areas of St. Tammany when all the power went out in the storm, when lights, alarms, and phone service also went out, and when the police hunkered down in their shelters, and the looters and criminals ventured forth, or could venture forth unimpeded? How did those terrible, racist white folks react who live up in those environs? You can read the words of the police chief right now. In fact, I will read them to you. Was there a crime wave? Did anybody shoot at rescue vehicles and helicopters? Was there mass rape, looting, and murder? Nope. My friends, crime went down. Crime went down. Here's an article again from the Picayune, by Charlie Chapel, St. Tammany Bureau, Tuesday, 7:55 p.m. Getting no recognition was the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which Mayor Candace Watkins said did nothing to help recovery efforts in the city or parish except for 3 water and ice distribution stations. Everything that was done in St. Tammany Parish was done without the help of the federal government, Watkins said. While praising parish officials for leading the recovery effort, 8 days after the storm, FEMA officials can't even tell the city what needs to be done to recoup some of the city's costs for the disaster. Police Chief Jerry DeFranco reported a drop in crime during the past week. That's the week of the hurricane, ladies and gentlemen. These types of disasters bring about the best and the worst, Council President Pat Clinton said. I think we're seeing the best in Covington. Amen, ladies and gentlemen. Amen. We did see the best in Covington, and we saw the worst in New Orleans. Similar conditions, absolutely opposite response. The people in Covington acted like traditional America. The people in New Orleans acted like the chronic conditions of the Congo, or of Rwanda, or Somalia, or those places we look to around the world that are not really part of our civilization and culture. Ladies and gentlemen, America is changing. I have a quote here from the Washington Post. It's an amazing couple of quotes. There's a few things here. And here's part of, this is from Reuters. Military personnel patrol St. Charles Street in New Orleans, where residents fearful of looters have been shouting to passing Humvees to alert the soldiers to crimes in progress. And here's a quotation: "We're having some pretty intense gun battles breaking out around the city," said Captain Jeff Wynn of the New Orleans Police SWAT team. "Armed groups from 8 to 15 young men are riding around in pickup trucks looting and raping," he said. Troops back from Iraq find another war zone in New Orleans. "It's like Baghdad on a bad day." That's by Ann Scott Tyson, Washington Post staff writer, Tuesday, September 6, 2005. And here's a little bit of a quote from it. New Orleans specialist Frank, let me see, I lost some of that here, let me get it for you. New Orleans specialist Frank Atkinson, wearing his tan desert fatigues from his recent deployment in Iraq, alternately drove a Humvee through the downtown New Orleans streets littered with debris and putrid garbage and held suspected looters at gunpoint with his M4 rifle. "It's just so much like Iraq, it's not funny," said Atkinson of Woodlawn, Arkansas, "except for all the water, and they speak English." For a year ending this spring, Atkinson's infantry company of the Arkansas National Guard patrolled Baghdad's deadly Haifa Street, and scores of its members were awarded Purple Heart medals after fighting insurgents. Those war zone images and instincts came flooding back Friday when Atkinson and 300 other Arkansas guardsmen, wearing helmets and full body armor, rolled into the chaos of central New Orleans. "It's like Baghdad on a bad day," said Specialist Brian McKay of Mount Ida, Arkansas. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? An American city like Baghdad on a bad day. What are we doing? Where are we going? What have our leaders led us to? And another question is this, would this have ever have happened or been that bad if the National Guard troops, the American troops, would have been where they're supposed to be? National guarding, not foreign expeditioning. As you know, Saddam was never a threat to us. They never made a warlike action against us. And yet, we went over there and spent $300 billion of our dollars, hard-earned tax dollars. We went over there and we've subjected our men and even women today to being killed, to being wounded, to being maimed for life, crippled, blinded. It's just a crazy thing, ladies and gentlemen, and we didn't have them here when we needed them because they're overseas. You know, they sent back a lot of men in the Gulf Coast areas to these areas, and I tell you, I think that could have been a lot because they were afraid these men were going to revolt, because they read about what was happening to their families and the absolute danger that they were in back into America. This individual says, "When I read the article, I thought of Kevin Strom's last broadcast, Black Tsunami, which dealt with the New Orleans tragedy." It's from Joseph Morgan. "He made a comparison between the white race and the black community in America in terms of relative percentages of problem solvers versus troublemakers that compose each race. I don't know if the percentages are absolutely correct, but he said that while 10% of whites are problem solvers and 1% are troublemakers, the opposite is true for blacks. With only 1% of blacks is problem solvers and 10% troublemakers. The result of this in all black countries is obvious. You get Haiti, Zimbabwe, etc. What happens in first world societies with large concentrations of third world races, most of which are not too different from Negroes with these ratios, when there is some sort of breakdown, a catastrophe of some kind, you get a Katrina-type meltdown to one extent or the other. What happens as third world components of a society begin to numerically challenge or exceed the first world component? You have a society that constantly is on the edge of some sort of Katrina, with problem solvers greatly diminished as a percentage of society and troublemakers superseding them as a percentage. Katrina will seem like child's play in Western societies unless white men and women come to love and respect their race and become racially conscious and racially strong again. So true. So true, ladies and gentlemen. Bookworm talks a little bit. He said, he's got a few quotes, and I don't think I can go through all those right now. I'm just about out of time, and I'm in another country right now. I'm dealing with some very fine patriots and firing them up and motivating them the best I can, educating them, trying to give them a good idea of what's going on in terms of the world, what's going on in terms of American policy. I've got some teaching and instruction to do tomorrow, and I've got some very interesting days ahead, and I'll have some very interesting news for you in a few days about some achievements which I think will help my work and will help increase the impact of my work around the world. I want to see a lot more people doing the things that I'm doing, and that's where I spend most of my time, is trying to motivate and inspire and educate younger people. I'm trying to get people with a lot of talent and ability to get out there and really devote their lives to this cause, much, I guess, as I have. And I realize I've got a few years left, and I'm still vital, but who knows when I might be taken. I mean, we had an interesting situation in Sweden when the bomb went off. We had, you know, Marxist attack the bookstore and with lead pipes and baseball bats, and they trashed and attacked the bookstore there, and they were certainly after myself and Pedro Varela and the other leaders. I mean, when you have an individual who leads and stands up, you become the target because you personify the things that they oppose. So who knows how long I'll be on this planet, but I just want to make sure that when I pass on, that there are many men and women ready to fill in my shoes and other shoes, the shoes of the other leaders that we have around the United States and around Europe and around Eastern Europe and really around the world. I don't know if we're going to have any particular, quote, messiah or an individual come forward who is going to lead us. It's kind of hard for that to happen these days because our enemies are so organized and they're so violent and so vicious. It would be almost impossible for someone even to survive all the way to victory. I remember when I approached political power in Louisiana when I got elected and then later went for the U.S. Senate, I would have been a member of one of the most 100 powerful men in the United States, and the Senate would have been a forum for us to tell these truths and everything to the rest of the country. I mean, people think that Jewish supremacist power is powerful. Well, is extensive and influential. But let me tell you, when they feel threatened, then you begin to see the real weight of it and the real viciousness of it. And I experienced that in those races. They spent huge amounts of money and a tremendous effort of slander and vileness to try and defeat me. They still didn't defeat me really among my constituency. I still received over 65% of the vote for the U.S. Senate, and I received over 60% of the vote for governor, in spite of being outspent 100-1 in media, in spite of all the rest of the news media to be biased against me. I mean, I could tell you stories for hours of the different things they did. The Jewish influence, they even influenced the head of the National Guard in Louisiana to send a personal letter to all the Guard members and say, you can't vote for David Duke, that's an un-American thing to do. And that's total, it's a total violation of protocol. Kevro says, I haven't been able to catch the past live broadcast since I've been busy. I'm here today to tell you that you've done a great job with your well-written articles and your responses to hate letters about the disaster in New Orleans, which are posted on your website. Well, thanks, Kevin. And again, we need a lot more people writing those kind of articles. And as I said, and I've been saying in my last few posts on the website, you can do it yourself. You can go to so many forums and post everything and reach people all over the world. It's really fantastic to think that this broadcast right now is going out live all over the world. And I'll have this up and archived very shortly for your listening enjoyment and for you to tell your friends that they can tune into this program and hear it from its entirety. This is from Maid of the Mist, or Maid of the Aryan Mist, and Mr. Duke, I surely am not surprised at the way blacks handled the Katrina disaster versus how whites handle it. Nothing was surprising to me as I was raised in the truth. My question is, why don't other whites get it? I know of no one where I live who has changed their views. Whites seem to have a death wish. I live in New Jersey, where most whites are apathetic, save a few. New Jersey has imported Jamaicans and Haitians to the extent they are actually starting to outnumber homegrown blacks in many areas. The Jewish menace? Lots of luck. The vast majority of whites see no danger in Zionism and its death grip on our society. I just don't see how we can win this fight with the vast majority of European whites being too afraid or just not interested in fighting for their survival. Well, all I can tell you, Maid of the Aryan Mist, is that people thought the same thing in Louisiana when I first ran for office, and they said nobody really supports us, we don't have any real chance. And then all of a sudden things changed in a heartbeat. The whole psychology changed, and things can change again, and I think things will change in the future. Let's see, Charles Lindbergh, the intrepid James Kelso, says, here's some information that underscores the contrast between the behavior of whites and non-whites during and after Hurricane Katrina. On Monday, August 29th at 2 p.m., after the strongest winds of Hurricane Katrina had torn up the small white cities of Covington and Mandeville, probably 90% of the local residents were gone. They had evacuated after having given a mandatory evacuation order for everyone south of Interstate 12. Walking and driving around both towns was like being in a ghost town. Thousands of homes were completely unguarded. Did any whites go in? Any kind of looting spree among these thousands of completely unguarded homes? Did any white people take advantage of the fact that no alarm systems were working since all the electric power is down? The revealing answer to that question is no. Whites, including the many poor whites of Covington, simply don't behave the way that blacks in New Orleans behave. Well, Charles, that is absolutely correct, and that's true. And what you said, too, in our area, in Old St. Tammany, by the way, used to be a bedrock of the old organizations of many years ago, if you know what I mean. There are many poor white people, many white people who are retired, barely on substance incomes. And there are also many white young people, and young people today face a very difficult road. It's much difficult, more difficult for a young person to get started today than a young person 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And there's a lot of young people on the verge of what you would call poverty, and they didn't go out and commit they didn't do any human vivisections. And in fact, as the police chief says it all, that little article I printed says it all. The police chief says that in Covington, Mandeville, the crime rate was down. It wasn't even high before the storm, but it was down. And how does that compare to the absolute mayhem of New Orleans? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to go on, and I appreciate you all. I'll try to post this in the archives right away. Thanks so much for being with me, and I'll certainly be with you and endeavor and look forward to being with you tomorrow evening. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.